live. Yeah, yeah, we going live. Hey, hey, we going live. Yeah, yeah, we going live. Yeah, yeah, we going. Yeah, 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 we going. Yeah, 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 we going live. From the 50-yard line, we going live. From the 50-yard line, we going live. From the 50-yard line.
Hey. Hello, beautiful people.
Hello, hello, hello.
I am Jared, the football genius Burgess.
And I am Stephanie Fitzpatrick, AKA the Advantage Coach.
And this is episode 142 of the Field to the Real podcast.
Yes, yes, yes. So I'm excited.
I am too.
We
are coming up on 150.
Yes, I can't. It blows my mind. Like, you know, that we've been doing this long. It just blows every time. I'm just like, thank you, God.
Right.
No matter what, we get it done, right? I was in the hospital on Wednesday, y'all, but guess what?
Right.
We
hit record. It's New Year's Eve.
Yes. Recording on New Year's Eve, in fact. Yes.
We recorded on Thanksgiving
yep.
Day.
Yep.
You know, and so we're super dedicated to
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm excited. I'm excited about another episode. We get to, we got some, listen, we had to stop ourselves from just having coffee because we, y'all don't understand how, we just be going. Like,
yeah.
We're not staging anything. It's not fake phony. What you see is literally how we are when we talk about this stuff. And so we had to stop ourselves like, wait, let's just wait until we're on. To have this conversation.
Right. So it doesn't seem recycled because
it's not.
But we was about to get into
a production meeting. We still come on here and it's still, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, we just excited about the topics. And thank you, Jared, for taking the lead this week on getting the content prepared since I was a little out of
now pocket. Listen. You still sent it. you sent it to me last night. I'm in the middle of, you know, working at the Kennesaw State game.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, I'm gonna wait till I get home to send it. And I thought about it. Thank goodness you text me when you did, because when I thought about it, I was like, I ain't gonna make it home till about 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I had already started putting topics down, but it was like, you know, you sent it to me and it was all formatted, and I was like, all right, let me just fill my stuff in here.
Yeah, so I really appreciate you. I appreciate you. This is true partnership. We truly are like in this together, and I just appreciate you taking the reins to get the topics out there. So we're gonna get started.
Yes.
With our who's really right.
Yes.
So I don't know how many of you know, but every year this happens in professional and collegiate. Sports, but we are almost, what, we got 2 weeks left in the season?
Mm-hmm.
Two weeks left in NFL season. And so a lot of times coaches are on the hot seat.
Yes.
At this point. And so we are at that point where we're talking about who's really going to be able to remain on their job and sustain, or who's going to be out at the end of the year or before. We've seen Urban Meyer hit the bricks.
And Chucky.
Seen Chucky hit the bricks.
Yeah.
So, which is really rare, honestly, especially in professional sport for them. And you got to really be either doing something very horrible, which is the case for both of them, or you've got to be really like bring the team down to the dirt for them to get rid of you before a season is over.
Yeah.
And so we've got a few coaches on the hot seat.
Yes.
And so our who's really right is who's going to be out.
Okay.
So we've got at least four that we know of right now.
Four that we know of.
And that's Pete Carroll of the Seattle Seahawks, Mike Zimmer of the Minnesota Vikings, Matt Nagy of the Chicago Bears, and who's the last one? I can't think of his name right now. What's the other guy's name? Can't think of his name. Oh my gosh. Why did it just leave me? Oh,
we were just talking about
Vic Fangio.
Vic Fangio of the Broncos.
Fangio, yes. Of the Denver Broncos. Those four are on the hot seat. So Jared,
mm-hmm.
Man first.
Oh Lord. this is what equity looks like.
Absolutely. Oh gosh. Who do you think is out?
I only think one of those four are really going to be out.
Okay.
I think it'll probably only be Matt Nagy.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's done enough of a horrible job. I think this was the last hurrah for him. And just given the circumstances, unless Justin Fields had a phenomenal season and they ended up somehow showing some improvement,
yeah,
he was going to be fired this year regardless.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
And I say that because at some point they were going to have to play Justin Fields, even though they brought in, what's his name? I just keep thinking of Red Rocket in my
head. Andy Dalton. Not Red Rocket.
that was his nickname when he was
Ginger. I know he's a little ginger. But, yes, but okay. So okay.
Go ahead. See?
So for me, I feel like I'm gonna rebut your statement first. I don't think he'll be out if just yet because of the same reason you just gave. You had Justin Fields, who was a rookie quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that the grace that is given to certain people is probably going to be upon his life in this moment. Because that could be the excuse. That could be the excuse to why your team did not, you know, do well this year.
Right.
So I feel like it's Pete Carroll.
Whoa, okay.
I do. For a couple of reasons. And Lord Jesus, I know it's ageism, but it's real. The man is old.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start there. And they may need some, but because he's not, what I haven't seen is the ability to adjust.
Yeah.
To what's in front of you, what you've got. And you've got talent. It, while it's diminished, especially on the defensive side,
mm-hmm.
You still have talent on your team, and you have not been able to make the adjustments necessary. And this is sometimes the issue when you're talking about older coaches, because they get like set old people ways. Get set in their ways and feel like my way is the right way, right? Or I don't need to make adjustments or change the way that I do things. And when you did, and then I'll say this, when you did try to make a slight adjustment, which was have Russell throw the ball 50 times, that wasn't the answer either.
Right.
So you didn't go from, because you were a run first team and then Russ could just do his thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You went from, you didn't try the middle ground. Let's try to find out if we can run a little bit, keep the run game honest, at least right. Attempt, and then have Russell throw it up. No, you just went from one extreme to the other. And I feel like because you weren't able to, and again, this is not ageism, but because you're older and this has just been your kind of how you've done things, it may be time for you to go because you don't have the ability to make the adjustments the way you need to.
So I think
I like Pete Carroll. Let me just put that out there.
No, we talked about that before. We both like Pete Carroll. And I feel like any other older coach, I think I could roll with that sentiment. I think Pete Carroll is the type of coach who is willing to adjust. And I think that in a vacuum, looking at something like this,
mm-hmm.
It would be cause and effect, but because there's so many factors involved with this, number one being that you wrecked your salary cap to make at the time to make Russell Wilson the highest paid quarterback at the time that he got his deal. Mm-hmm. Well, for those of you who, you know, aren't aware of the economics of
this is the businessman, Jared. This,
the economics of pro football. What happens is you have a finite amount of money to pay all of your players. What happens is when a quarterback usually takes up the majority of that money.
Yeah.
It's called a salary cap. So whatever the amount is every year, and every year goes up. Mm-hmm. This year it didn't go up, I believe, because of COVID. Mm-hmm. But it will be going up again next year. But every year that it goes up, every year goes up, and the team has a certain amount of money to spend. Well, if you have a lot of that money tied up into your quarterback, you can't pay other players to make your team better. So you have to get better through the draft. And I think what happened is, and this isn't necessarily on Pete Carroll, what happened is they didn't get that much better during the draft. Mm-hmm. Over the years where after they lost in the Super Bowl.
No.
And they made some very questionable mistakes.
DK Metcalf was the last best thing they did.
Oh yeah, definitely. And they hit on him, you know, but you got rid of Max Unger for Jimmy Graham. That was a mistake.
Yes.
And so the offensive line over the years has gone down. And so the thing is, and I know if I'm a GM, my mindset is, if I'm going to give Russell Wilson all of this money, I'm going to lean on the coaching staff to say, listen, we giving him all of this money. We need to let him cook. So you're probably going to throw the ball a lot more. And so that's why I like a lot of the things that, you know, that coaches get blamed for in the NFL are really just a part of business.
Yeah, bad business decisions.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to stick with it.
Is he the only one you think is gonna be gone?
If I had to pick somebody else, I would say Matt Nagy.
Okay.
If I had to pick somebody else. I don't think Zimmer has bombed that bad this year. I don't think he hasn't bombed that bad this year. The team has consistently been mediocre. He hasn't had a team that's been horrible. They've always been right there in contention for being in the playoffs and being in the playoffs even.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like he doesn't deserve, I don't think, to be fired at this point. I don't think so either.
He's only a few years removed from that catch against the Saints.
Almost in the Super Bowl.
You know what I'm saying? And that they just laid the egg against the Eagles in the NFC Championship. That was the year the Eagles won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, so he's kind of been right there. So I think he gets a little more grace. I think Vic Fangio gets a little more grace as well because this is only, what, year two for him? So he had the COVID year, and then this year, I believe his contract is for 5 years, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So I think he gets a little more time because if you fire him now, you got to pay him the rest of that contract.
And then the thing is, like, I know that this is the thing. They were hoping he would come in and they instantly start going back to the playoffs because they don't make it this year, which I don't think they will, sixth year in a row. Yeah. They haven't made it to the playoffs. It's pretty much since Peyton left. Y'all just been trash pretty much. It is what it is. So
can't get a quarterback.
Sounds you like need a quarterback. Fault. There you go. Let's start there.
Sounds like the GM's fault.
Business. Here we go again. Business.
Who's the GM?
You know how I feel about that there. Yes. But I feel like they will have now. See, this brings us back to our point from last week. Mm-hmm. Now, Peyton getting involved might make things a little more spicy for them. They might be able to wrangle some things and make some things happen. But yeah, I feel like he shouldn't be on the hot seat either at this point, honestly. I mean, I just don't. But yeah, if anybody, your boy Matt, just poor decision after poor decision. And it's not just, you know, you talk about it from a business standpoint or from, you know, as a head coach overall, looking at like at your team from this high level vision, it's on the field making bad calls.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, well, so, and I'm gonna tell you why I'm a lock for him of all of them getting fired. Because I think that it's almost a certainty that the GM gets fired.
Okay.
And so either way, even if the GM stays, I think the GM cuts ties with him to show that, all right, listen, I'm trying to do something to make this team better.
Right.
So,
well, I don't know. I still feel like he'll get the grace that some of us don't.
The protection for the complexion.
Yeah. That some of us don't. I think he will. Just because they'll have this to say that Justin Fields was a rookie. Second of all, he got hurt. Like, it's too many. Andy Dalton got hurt. I think Nick Foles is their quarterback right now. Like, they've had too many, like, you know, things twists and turns here. And it honestly, everybody got COVID as an excuse.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's going to keep him there. So y'all let us know who you think is really right.
Yes.
Jared thinks that Matt Nagy of the Chicago Bears is out. And I feel like it's Pete Carroll from the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah.
So y'all let us know. All right. So now let's get on to our topics.
Yes.
This first one. So anybody who's ever watched or listened to us knows that Jared and I have very, very different opinions about the SEC, the college football conference, the SEC. Yes, because I don't mean Securities and Exchange. I mean SEC.
Yeah, right. The Southeastern Conference.
Southeastern Conference. And so what we have witnessed over the last couple of weeks with the bowl games that have been taking place is a little disheartening when it comes to the SEC's dominance. So background, I feel like SEC is a place where grown men go to play. there is a level of talent or skill that is different than most conferences. Not saying that other conferences don't have talented and skilled players. I'm saying that I feel like the SEC just seems to pull the best, a lot of the best players in the country into their programs. That's all I'm saying. But we've seen, Jared, you probably got the actual facts here. About 5 SEC teams go down.
The SEC is one, and they were before yesterday, before South Carolina won yesterday. The SEC was 0-4.
So they're 1-5. Okay, 1-4.
So they're 1-5 now.
1-4 or 1-5?
1-5. Purdue lost to Tennessee. Purdue beat Tennessee last night.
That's right. So they're 1-5. So 5 SEC teams have gone down in bowl. And so the question is, what happens to them during the bowl season? What happens?
Yeah.
And this is why we had to stop talking, y'all, this conversation.
Yeah, because we almost went deep into this one.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask, like, what do you think the reason is? Like, what do you think because you almost got into it. But we were like, let's save this for the show so that you can make your point to why you feel like this occurs each year.
So
not each year, I won't say that. But
but it does happen a lot because a lot of SEC teams end up in the playoffs. I mean, in the bowls, in bowl games. So I really feel like this is, the SEC has less parity than the college football landscape itself has parity. And I say that because pretty much you're going to have the same teams that dominate. Sometimes you'll get a little flip here and there, but for the most part, you're going to see the same 3 or 4 teams that always dominate in the SEC. You're going to see Alabama, Georgia, Florida, why can't I think of who I'm thinking about? It's Alabama, Texas, Georgia, Florida.
Auburn, Texas A&M.
Auburn.
Auburn, okay.
You'll see it's flipped script like it's always over the last probably 3 decades. That's how it's kind of played out, right? Yeah. And so I feel LSU. Like
LSU.
Yep, that's who it was.
That's LSU. Who it was, yeah.
LSU. So I feel like because of that, we see when other teams who are not those teams make it to these bowl games that you get more parity. Mm-hmm. They're not pulling. So those top teams are always going to be the ones pulling those best players for the SEC.
Right.
But when you get those people who are, you know, Tennessee, Texas A&M, Arkansas, you start talking about those kind of murky water SEC teams, then you're starting to get that, have that issue of they're not as dominant.
Yeah.
They don't have the ability or the talent to dominate the way that those top teams might. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that's why we see the SEC when it comes to the bowl games kind of fall off, so to speak. You know what I mean? But we'll see today.
Yeah, we got two SEC teams who get the opportunity to fix this record.
Yeah,
My thing with the SEC and probably your statement that it's a grown man league is that in saying that, like you say that, and it's supposed to encompass the entire league, right? And so my only dispute with that was always that the SEC is just really top heavy. And so like even in mentioning those teams, outside of Auburn and LSU, what other team, Florida. Like Florida, those are the only teams that have won national championships over the last however many years. And so the league is top heavy and we're starting to see over the years more and more parity, not necessarily at the top because Alabama has just kind of, you know what I'm saying, dominated.
Yeah.
And I feel like wherever Nick Saban goes, he's going to get that. And he just so happened to land in the SEC.
I'm going to say, he's been at LSU and Florida, so, right? Was he in Florida? I know he was at LSU, wasn't he?
No, he was at LSU, and I think before that, he was at Michigan State.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought he was at Florida.
Well, no, but he was at LSU, then he went to the NFL. He was at the Miami Dolphins. Then he came back to Alabama.
That's what
before
it was.
LSU, he was
in Florida, State. But not Lynn College. That's right. Yeah.
So, and this is with fairness to my critique of the SEC in total, right? Because when you see stuff like Notre Dame, who I believe they were in that first playoff national championship game. And Alabama just blew the doors off of them. You know, like we saw back then, like, okay, they're just on a different level, Alabama is.
Right.
And so I don't feel like that necessarily speaks for the entirety of the league.
Okay.
Back then I felt like that, but now even more. Now, this is with respect to the point that I'm trying to make. Now, last year, the SEC's bowl record was 7-2. So
that 2020, was pretty respectable.
That's really good.
Yeah, that's pretty respectable.
The year before that, it was 8-2.
So could COVID have something to do with it?
Nah. So the reason why I say no though is because when you go back before that, right? And last year was the COVID season, so 7-2. Would have, you know what I'm saying, like, you know, if we were saying that it was because of that, then it could have possibly reflected in their record last year. But they're 1-5 right now. 2018 they were 6-6. 2017 they were 5-6. 2016 they were 6-7. And so like the only point that I'm making is as a league, we look at the top part of this league and say, oh, they're far and away better than the other leagues, but there's less parity in the league. And historically, there's been less parity in the league.
Yes.
Because, like, you put Vanderbilt up against the worst team in any other league, and I think the worst team in any other league comes out with a win.
With a victory.
You know what I'm saying? And even the Vanderbilt, middle of the road teams.
Vanderbilt, pick Vanderbilt of all the SEC teams. Like, yes.
Uh-huh. Bro, yeah. No, well, so, like, even if we put Vanderbilt against, what's the worst team in the Big Ten? Maryland? No. It's not Maryland. Because Maryland actually went to a bowl game.
I was going to say, didn't they go to a bowl game? I have no idea.
They beat the stuffing out of Virginia Tech the other day. 54-10, I think. Mm-hmm. So, no, not Maryland. Maybe, what's one of those teams in that league that, Indiana, maybe, wasn't that great this year.
Which is
surprising because they were really good last year.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I don't think they made it to it. I don't think they made it to
a bowl game. Okay.
Yeah.
So you think of Indiana was still, well, I feel that way. It's Vanderbilt. Lord, y'all forgive me, but yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah.
But even if we took, like, you know, we still got to take those other teams like Missouri, who ended up getting into the league, you know.
We can't talk about that because I still don't agree with any of that.
Oh, any of those, the expansion teams? Well, Texas A&M is a good look. You know what I'm saying? For the SEC, Texas A&M is a good look. I think that it takes away from another league and brings to, I guess, the point of the dominance of the SEC teams. Now, like Texas A&M, and I believe, is it Oklahoma State? Oh, no, Oklahoma. That's coming over.
Yeah.
Like, that only beefs up the idea that this is the best league and they're just far and away above everybody else.
Well,
but I think right now, like, you know, it's hard to say that. Now, right now, we look at Alabama's probably being the best team, right? And even with you saying that this team doesn't look like Alabama or the Alabama of the years past, Georgia's the only team that, I mean, Georgia, their only loss is against that team.
Correct.
Right? And Alabama's only loss is against Texas A&M. So for the two heavyweights of that league, they only lost in conference. They didn't lose to any out of the conference teams, like, to your point.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when it comes down to these bowl games, and I think one of the arguments that I thought you were going to make is that these are just glorified exhibition games. And so not all of the teams are sold out for them, you know?
No.
Because what we've been saying is, like, even with Michigan State beating Pitt last night, you know, Pitt didn't have their starting quarterback. Actually, I think they were down to their third string. And Michigan State didn't have Kenneth Walker and some other players who kind of made the decision, like, yeah, I'm not going to play.
Right.
And so what we're saying is, like, they're not putting the same effort into these bowl games as they are during the season.
Okay. Makes sense.
But even still, when you look at the SEC's win-loss record against other conferences during the season, it's only Alabama and Georgia who are carrying the league as far as, like, out-of-conference games. So.
Okay. Well, I don't know, y'all. It's just weird to me that they keep, I don't know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but okay.
With NIL, you're going to start to see a lot more parity. Like,
of course.
Alabama won't be able to hit the top recruits. And I mean, I know they had the number one recruiting class this year, but they won't be, or did they?
No, it wasn't them, was it?
It wasn't Alabama this year.
Mm-mm. I thought it was Georgia, but okay.
Oh, no, you might be right. It might be Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And so, they won't be able to get it'll be spread out a lot more, and players will go where they really want to go and not say to themselves, well, let me go join Alabama because I know it's a high percentage that I'm going to win the national championship.
Right. Or I'll get to the league. Like, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I feel you. I understand. We'll see.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see what happens today.
Me too. I really am. I am rooting for both non-SEC teams.
Of course you are. Of course you are. Of course you are. That's no surprise. All good. So let's keep it moving.
Okay.
So they announced on Tuesday, I believe, the class of 2022 NFL Hall of Famer.
Yes.
Hall of Fame class of 2022. Sorry. And so how do you feel about it?
So let me run through the list first.
Yeah.
And I'm going to just say, based off of these names, like how I feel about the finalists as a whole, because I know not all of them will end up making it into the class, but we'll start with Jared Allen, Willie Anderson,
okay,
offensive lineman, Rondé Barber,
okay,
Tony Boselli,
okay,
Leroy Butler,
mm-hmm,
Devin Hester,
mm-hmm,
Torrey Holt,
mm-hmm,
Andre Johnson,
mm-hmm,
Sam Mills, have no idea why he's not in, Richard Seymour,
mm-hmm,
Zach Thomas, DeMarcus Ware, Reggie Wayne, Patrick Willis, Brian Young.
Yep.
There's not a person on this list that I feel like shouldn't be in there.
Hmm. Okay.
Now, I think what would be fun for us to do, if we could only pick five of these names.
Yeah.
Who would they be for you?
Oh, that's cruel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Okay. Let me think. Okay. I'm going to pick Jared Allen.
Okay.
Rondé Barber.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's hard. Richard Seymour.
Okay.
That's three, right?
That's
I got two four. More.
You said Jared Allen, Rondé Barber, Richard Seymour.
Richard Seymour, that's three.
Oh, that's three, I'm sorry.
Three. Reggie Wayne.
Four.
Who else? I'm gonna go with Sam Mills.
Sam, okay. Those I like that list.
That would be my five.
I like that list.
Because I feel like Devin Hester and who else is it? Devin Hester. There's three who this is their first ballot.
Yeah.
So y'all can be okay.
Right. I think this is first ballot for Devin Hester, Andre Johnson.
Yeah.
It's
one other
person. And DeMarcus Ware.
DeMarcus Ware. Yeah. Like, no.
Yeah.
No. I feel all like, right. Yeah, those other people have earned it before you, if you ask me.
So what's your five? My five.
Mm-hmm.
Rondé Barber.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Boselli.
Okay.
Torrey Holt. DeMarcus Ware and Patrick Willis.
Okay. We almost completely different.
I know. The thing is, I think with the exception of Rondé Barber, we are like
completely different. Yeah.
I feel like Torrey Holt.
Now he the one I was
has
like.
Has not been getting the respect that he deserves. I don't know if everyone remembers the greatest show on turf.
Oh, yeah.
But he was the leader of that. And they, for that three or four-year stretch.
St. Louis, when they were the Rams, yeah.
His numbers were unreal. They were like video game numbers. Like Madden on rookie numbers. And so, like, you know, I understand that there are a lot of arguments between the whole, you know, you shouldn't get the receivers because of some receivers who didn't get in on their first ballot and stuff like that. And so, you know, Torrey Holt has been passed over for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, all right, this is long enough for Torrey Holt. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. This is long enough for him. You know, you can't say to him he hasn't won a Super Bowl because he won a Super Bowl with the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think he has to go.
Okay.
And I think Patrick Willis, just based off of the fact that he and Chris Borland, if that's his name, I think that's his name, were the first two, I think, players who heard about the CTE thing mm-hmm. and was like, listen, they played at a high level, but I'm not destroying the rest of my life.
That's where I'm dipping.
For this.
That's right.
Huh?
That I'm dipping.
Yeah.
I'm dipping. Mm-hmm.
And so I think I picked Patrick Willis based off of the fact that
got it.
I still feel like he should be rewarded for the way that he played.
Yeah.
But I know that he probably won't because of the stance that he's taking.
Yeah.
He only played, what, 7-8 years?
Yeah.
He was all pro, almost all of them.
Yeah.
You know.
He's a beast now. That's not the problem. Yeah. And I know, I'll just say this, we know Zach would get in before he will.
Oh, yeah. Zach Thomas definitely, yeah.
He'll get in.
He would have been, I think I may have mentioned this to you a long time ago, Steph, but I used to be a Dolphins fan. I had a brief moment in there where I was a Dolphins fan. Okay. And I think it was less of that I was actually a Dolphins fan and more just I was a fan of certain players for the Dolphins. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I would root for those players, which in turn would have me root for the Dolphins. So like Ricky Williams,
mm-hmm.
Zach Thomas,
mm-hmm.
and Taylor.
Jason Taylor.
Mm-hmm. I was about to say, his sister's on Fox Sports.
Jason Taylor.
Right now. But Jason
mm-hmm.
Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
I was big fans of those players. And so yeah. I would root for them when they were playing. True. Yeah.
They were the truth. I love some Jason Taylor now. That's why I know the name. When you said
Taylor. Oh, Jason?
Jason. Love some Jason Taylor. So yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's good. I this is a tough one. Again, I'm not knocking the three rookie count, like three first time ballots.
First timers, yeah.
But I feel like these other guys, any one of these that you pick, I'm okay with, honestly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So yeah.
And I think the one who I would have substituted for you know me putting Patrick Willis there for my feelings is Sam Mills. Because
mm-hmm.
for him to receive this posthumously, he was a monster.
Yes, he was.
And so for him to receive it posthumously would mean so much.
It would, absolutely.
And that's who I would, you know, kind of tweak. So we would have two together in common.
Yeah. All right. Cool. All right. Well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
All right. So this was hilarious to me, you know.
Oh, man.
Oh, God. This was so funny. So recently, Iman Shumpert, and forgive me because I do not have the name of his podcast.
The Boulay Care Podcast.
Okay, there you go. That right there. he talked about LeBron.
Yes.
And so tell us the story, because LeBron is your dude. So I'm going to let you handle this, okay?
Well, so, and I love, one, he was high out of his mind during this conversation.
That's in general where he stays now, because he's not playing anymore. So.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, but what I appreciated about the conversation is that like he didn't hold anything back.
No, he a real one, as they say about him. And anybody who talks about Iman Shumpert will say
they'll say that
same thing. He is a real one. He don't care. He don't say what he feel, and that's it. So, yeah.
And even he knew that, like, even his comments could, like, cause him, you know, some opportunity and stuff like that. But he was like, yo, I gotta give it to you guys real.
Mm-hmm.
And so he basically said that LeBron making the decision, because of how big he is, because of the amount of influence that LeBron has, him making the decision to go to Miami is what spawned Kevin Durant making a decision to go to the Warriors. Even though he doesn't see them as being similar or the same, he said that set the precedence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and so now players like James Harden jump into the Nets, even though that was a trade.
Right. They wanted him out. Kinda,
But he forced his way there. He said that he wouldn't report anywhere else. That's where he wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so he feels like LeBron kind of started that trend, and he ruined basketball because of
it. I was waiting on you to say it. That's what he said. Yeah. LeBron ruined basketball. That's what he said.
That's
Yes. Yeah. I thought it was hilarious. And I will say this, we know Iman played with LeBron, so there's no hard feelings. This wasn't anything.
No,
this wasn't malicious. It wasn't anything that was meant to harm. He was just speaking his truth and how he saw in context what happened and what it, the firestorm that it started essentially across the NBA. And so I just thought it was funny.
Yeah.
I love Iman Shumpert and his wife. And so I just thought it was funny. I thought that his take on it was interesting. I don't know that anybody else, and it's because when you just said it, it did bring it to me, like, but it was so similar. Like, why Kevin Durant went to the Warriors is the reason LeBron went to the Heat. It's the same thing. They wanted to give themselves a better shot at winning the championship. That's it. Like, it was nothing more than what I'm trying to be. No, you know, none of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the circumstances are certainly different, but the rationale behind wanting to leave and is at the end of the day, taking your destiny into your own hands and not allowing the GMs to make the decision. Because to me, the Heatles was really no different than Danny Ainge pulling together Paul Pierce, Ray Allen,
Kevin Garnett.
And Kevin Garnett. Like, that really wasn't, it wasn't different. It's just that he's a savvy GM, and now the players were forced to play GMs, because we talk about LeBron and him going to the finals against the San Antonio Spurs that year and how he had the mop bucket in the room.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so, like, I don't think that they were willing to put him in the – like, the owner, to me, was just comfortable selling out arenas.
That's all they care about.
Right, boosting the – huh?
I said that. I didn't mean to say that. That is a great deal of what they – it's business.
Yeah.
So, for them, the bottom line is about the money.
Yeah.
So yeah. But no, that's I can't even remember what I was watching. And their take on it was so funny. The guy, I can't remember which show I was watching and said that talked about this. And he said, why is it that we keep trying to make everything about LeBron when it comes to basketball? Mm-hmm. And just like, let that man just make decisions for what's best for him and his family. That's what he did. Mm-hmm. He just simply made a decision that was best for him and his family. And I don't think Iman was trying to say it was wrong or bad. It was just, you know, he saw what happened after that and how it's affected basketball since then.
I'm going to give you a great parallel. A few months ago, people got on, what is his name? The former coach of the Golden State Warriors. Mark Jackson. Mm-hmm. Folks got on Mark Jackson for saying that Steph Curry ruined basketball.
Mm.
And so I can understand it, like hearing that and that being a headline, you're like, wait.
What?
Steph is the greatest shooter of all time, one of the greatest players in basketball history. What do you mean he ruined basketball?
Right.
But if you don't dig in the context of, like, I mean this because these are the resulting actions of his greatness, then you won't understand the reason why he said that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right?
So his influence, much like LeBron's influence, changed the way that people do business.
It's okay. The world revolves and it moves and changes.
Yeah,
ebb and flow. So it's okay. Like, you know how I feel about LeBron as a person, anyway. So yeah.
Yeah.
Like, do you, boo. Don't worry about it.
Right.
Like, for real. So I love it. But I just thought it was funny. Iman Shumpert is hilarious. So that was funny. All right. So we're at my favorite part. Real roll call. And this is where we just quickly go through some topics and give our response. And, of course, I'm not timing it again. We're going to make it through. We did it in record time last week, and I just trust that we will again.
Yeah.
So let us get started. So our first topic is indie rocker Faye Webster. is a huge fan of the Braves. Like, literally, she said during the pandemic and her being like isolated, like not being able to perform, that she spent her time watching the Braves because she's from Atlanta, loves the Braves, but has an affinity for one particular Brave, Mr. Acuña Jr.
Yes.
Acuña Jr. And so he was her muse for her album that she put out that happened to go, I don't know how far it went, but it did very well.
Oh, wow. Okay.
One of her best-selling albums. And he was the muse for that. What's your thoughts?
I think that's dope. You know, like, as a musician.
Yes.
And someone who makes music.
Yes.
Like, using someone in popular culture, like, to create, you know, it's just, it's always been a thing.
Yeah.
You know, and so I thought it was dope that, especially because she did this before the Braves won the
this album was from last year,
World Series.
Yes, this was 2020 album. So yeah,
I think it's dope that she came out and spoke about it.
Yeah,
now, like, you know,
right? Yeah.
So not only does Ronald Acuña Jr. have a World Series title,
right?
He was the muse of the inspiration behind a successful album.
Successful album. How dope is that? I'm like, how dope is that? I'm like, now my thing is, Mr. Acuña Jr., are you gonna holler at him? Like, let her know how you feel about it. I feel like that's a necessity, right?
Oh yeah, he has to listen to the album and like,
gotta let her know what you feel about being her muse. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
All right. Next topic. Brady. Tom, if y'all don't know who we talk about, unfortunately, that we talk about him just about every week. Anyway, Tom Brady came out and said that the league warned him, because if y'all listened to last week's show, we talked about him having a temper tantrum on the sideline and throwing the Surface, the tablet. And so the league warned him that if he did it again, they were going to find him because he can't be through. So I find it interesting that they did not find him now because he did it regardless. Mm-hmm. Don't warn him. You knew not to throw the throwing thing. Let's start there. But anyway, what do you think?
Can I call white privilege on this?
Okay, sure.
Or, nah. Maybe it's not white privilege. Maybe it's goat privilege.
It's called Brady privilege. I don't know if it's white privilege. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I feel like it's, because I feel like this, let's pick another quarterback.
Russell Wilson.
Mm-mm. No, he can't be black. Another quarterback.
Okay.
Oh, your boy. Your man, your bromance. Tannehill.
Okay.
If this was Ryan Tannehill and he threw that thing, you know he'd be fine, right? Okay.
Of course. Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know that this is white
privilege. Okay. So yeah, okay, I see.
This is Tom Brady privilege.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Goat privilege.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right. Next topic. Draymond Green about the game postponement. Look at you.
I couldn't. No, I ironically enough, I'm actually on Draymond Green's side with this one.
No, I feel him. I am too.
I think the only caveat I like got once I thought about it right before we recorded or we started recording was that the Omicron variant, you know, is a lot easier to contract.
It's easier transmittable. Yes. Right. Yes.
And so because of that, we kind of got to look at people contracting it through a different lens.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the point that he made was, y'all didn't do this. Y'all didn't postpone no games for us when our players got it and we lost games. Yeah. So you're going to give them a competitive advantage. And I was like, you know what? I completely, I get
I'm
it.
With him.
I'm with you
I'm
on
with it.
It.
Yeah.
I just.
What's good for the goose is good for the game.
Indeed. My only thing is, like, we have to look at, like, now with the, and it morphed some time ago, but with the, you know, the new variant, we got to look at this a lot different because so many people are coming down with it. Like, we can't just have games where it's six people on the court. Like,
well, that would have been, that's the only reason they did it, because they didn't even have enough people to play.
Right.
That, I mean, that's really the only reason they did it. But
right.
To his point, I feel like, but it doesn't matter if we had 10 people out or we had six people out, there was a disadvantage.
Right.
And so at that point,
you should have postponed those games.
Period.
Too.
Exactly. Right. That was, yes,
I agree.
How about this one? How about this? I need our president and these people to stop backing off and just shut the country back down. And I don't care who likes it.
Yeah.
And so all of these things that's happening, just shut them down instead of trying to piecemeal things together and hope that, who can we just hang on? It's our capitalistic society at its finest. Indeed. This is what's happening. Anyway, that's not what we talk about on here. All right. Missouri upset number one South Carolina.
Now, I'm going to tell you why I'm not worried about South Carolina with this one.
Okay.
I feel like they still probably should have won that game, right? And in a second, we're going to talk about, like, decisions by referees that lead to, you know, to the outcome of games. But there was 0.1 seconds left on the clock, right, with Missouri up by one.
Right.
Because they had just hit the game winner.
What ended up being the game winner.
But when, and I cannot think of her name, but the young lady, I believe her hair was purple. When they threw the inbound pass to her, she jumped in the air and went right up with it and scored. And they ended up coming back and saying that the time had run out when, now, if I'm not mistaken, apparently, I guess maybe she held the ball a little bit. It looked like she tapped it in.
Right, because if she had just tapped it, they would have.
It would have been enough time.
But because it actually was in the palm of her hand for that split, which is only that 0.1 seconds that was left,
right.
it was not in process of going into the basket. And so that's why they called it. I mean, it was a huge loss, but not, I agree with you. It was not a huge loss because you were this close to really, the palm of her hand was literally the difference between the game. If she had just took her fingernails and hit the ball,
it
would have been a game winner.
Yeah.
Yeah. So literally it was a game of less than inches. Less than
Game of seven.
Speaking of that, we'll get to that in a minute. Anyway. Right. So Rajon Rondo to the Cavs.
He's received a lot more DMPs over the last since the bubble. He received a lot more DMPs, and so I think maybe it's just over for him. You know.
Thank you. That's all I was gonna say. That was my only point. You made my point. I just go sit down, boo-boo. It's okay.
Yeah.
When they start trading you three and four times in the same season, you know it's time to just go sit down. It's okay.
So a part of me feels like, though, that he has to be a better option than Russ. With the way that Russ is turning the ball over.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And the amount of points that they're losing by.
If you cut those turnovers in half.
This is an age thing.
That's what this is. And honestly, it's a popularity thing.
Definitely.
Russ's name has, LA is the place where everybody's celebrity superstars. So having LeBron was huge. Bringing AD, huge. Having Russ, huge, right? So
he's from LA.
It's the name. It's the name and the age thing, and Rondo is neither one, not young nor is he famous like him. Like, you know, people know Rajon Rondo, but they don't know. If you said Russell Westbrook, they know who you're talking about.
Right.
So those are the things that I think lend them to keep Russ over him.
Yeah.
All right. So this last thing, the Music City Bowl. Listen, let me tell you something. This is what be running my blood pressure up right here.
Yeah.
the game ends, again, with inches.
Mm-hmm.
So they score, or suppose, well, anyway, I'm giving my opinion. I'm going to let you talk because I'm
No, go ahead. No, go ahead, go ahead.
Tennessee, the running back, I'm going to just say, breaks the plane mm-hmm. with the ball.
Right.
And the referees say, when they go to review, that his progress was stopped
mm-hmm.
prior to him crossing the plane with the ball. Because mm-hmm. the man's knees never went down.
Right.
So I guess my thing is, my problem is, why are referees making those types of game deciding decisions? Because
mm-hmm.
even if you said, well, we blew the whistle, so play was stopped, which is what they essentially, that's what they said, his progress was set. Right. But you put a rule in place that they can continue to push the teammates mm-hmm. can continue to push. This is college football now.
Right.
That they can continue to push forward.
Yeah.
So any gain they make with that pushing should mm-hmm. be counted. So until he was on the ground, you saw his knees, he was being twisted up, something, right? Until that mm-hmm. was happening, why did you blow the whistle?
This is a tough one, right? Because I wanted Purdue to win.
Of course you did. It's the SEC.
Purdue did. I wanted Purdue to win. Purdue did win.
Yes.
And when I first saw it, I was like, that's a touchdown. But when I saw it from the other angle, after looking at it again, the reason why you have that rule in place for forward progress to stop is to prevent injury.
Exactly. That's what I said. If you saw him being twisted up, then fine.
But you can't only do it when, like, the injury occurs.
Correct.
You have to do it for protection.
Preventative measures. Right. I understand.
And so I think that the referee clearly blows the ball dead. Now, we could talk about the referee and saying, like, yo, is there some bias there? Because maybe you didn't have to blow the whistle then. But within the rules of the game, his forward progress was stopped, which, and I think they were saying this on the broadcast, like, nothing touched the ground. Well, typically when forward progress is stopped, nothing is on the ground because usually the people are, like, standing up.
Right, because it would be stopped automatically if they were on the ground.
Right. Now, if this was the fourth quarter with 2 minutes left and his forward progress would stop, this would be a non-issue. But because it was in overtime and it was an untimed down and this happened then, I don't think that you could let the game end like that.
Okay.
You know, okay. So in essence, I just went all around I just went all around to say that I don't think that the referee should decide the game in that way. Not on a technicality like that. I understand why. Like, that's the rule, but
yeah.
I think that you allowed a touchdown because Purdue still had the opportunity to go and score.
That's my point. You didn't give them, like, you didn't, yeah. That I think bigger than right. the you making the objective or this subject, well, which one is it? Subjective.
Mm-hmm.
Call to say, this stop forward progress is stopped right here. Just let that, and then let Purdue have to go on their own laurels and win the game.
Well, I mean, on the same side of the coin, if you're the coach for Tennessee, one, you had the opportunity to kick a field goal and didn't. Now, this play is within the rules, and your defense had the opportunity
to go
out and stop them. You know what I'm saying? And so if this had truly ended the game, like, Purdue kicked the field goal first and then the play ended on this, mm-hmm. I would have had a much bigger issue with the game ending that way. Mm-hmm. But because there was still an opportunity for the game to either,
you know,
go into a second overtime or, yeah. you know,
yeah.
It was understandable.
I reckon, I'm talking country right now. I reckon. Yeah. Anyway, time's up.
Yes. I'm sure we didn't win over.
We went way over on that one. Took a lot of time with that one. Sorry, right. y'all. I didn't have that time. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right. On to the real. All right, so this on to the real is kind of a one that hits close to home for me. And I think in some respects it may for Steph as well, mm-hmm. Only from the standpoint that the recipient of this on to the real spotlight is a native Atlantan.
A female. And so,
yes, and a woman, a Black woman. Yeah. And so... Our on to the real spotlight for this week is Tamika Smith-Jones. And so Tamika Smith-Jones is currently the chief operating officer of athletics at Kennesaw State University, which is just north of Atlanta, huh?
Girl, I say go girl.
Yeah. But again, she's a native Atlantan, but she got her start. She played basketball at Troy University before transferring and graduating from Alabama A&M, where she played basketball and ran cross country.
Okay.
After that, she got her master's degree from Savannah State and a certificate from Warren National University.
Okay.
She got her start in athletics at Clark Atlanta University. She got her start. She got her start at, dang it, it's in the AUC too. I don't know how that just
It's Spelman Clark, Morehouse, and Morris Brown.
Morris Brown.
Okay.
So she got her start at Morris Brown. Mm-hmm. And after Morris Brown, she went to Clark Atlanta, where she was the senior administrator for compliance. Then she became the athletic director at Clark Atlanta. Once she left Clark Atlanta, she went to the University of Texas at San Antonio. And then she was the associate AD, the senior associate AD for internal affairs. And that was all before going to UC Riverside, University of California, Riverside, where she was the athletic director. So she's been in this game of athletics for well over 20 years.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to spotlight her because there aren't many women in athletic administration at this level.
Not at that level. No.
You know, and so, that's one of the reasons I wanted to spotlight her. But the reason I even know about her is that I've been, for those of you who don't know, I've been, volunteering at Kennesaw State University basketball games, where I've had the pleasure of meeting Ms. Tamika Smith-Jones and Mr. Milton Overton, who are basically the athletic director, Milton Overton, and the second in command, Tamika Smith-Jones, and they showed me nothing but love. I've spoken to both of them about, you know, my goals as far as athletics and what we do with the Field to the Real project and podcast. And so when I spoke to her last night and I had found out that she started at Troy but actually ended up at Alabama A&M, I was like, oh, this is a no-brainer. So
yeah, I love it.
Shout out to her.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
I grow my. All right.
Kudos, lady. I love it. Yes. Go for it. I'm here for it. I'm here for all of it. Yes. All right. So our feel good, we got kind of two feel good final thoughts this week.
Yes.
First one is the eyeball sweater.
Yeah.
Because we lost a legend this week. even though he was up in age, it was still unexpected.
So,
Hall of Fame broadcaster, mm-hmm. player, coach, John Madden.
Yeah.
Passed away this week.
Yeah.
And I just, for me, I think Howard Cosell was on the way out mm-hmm. when I was young, and John Madden kind of filled that space.
Yeah.
So for most of my childhood and even young adulthood, mm-hmm. John Madden was the face of football commentators yeah. for me. And I loved him because he was just himself mm-hmm. unapologetically.
Right.
Unlike Howard Cosell was more of your charismatic, down the middle of the road type of mm-hmm. Joe Buck reminds me.
Yes.
Of yes. a Howard Cosell type of commentator.
Yes.
John Madden did not care. Mm-hmm. Did not care. Said what he felt. Felt mm-hmm. what he said. So I loved that about him. Mm-hmm. And condolences to his family, for sure.
Yeah.
That's a big loss for not just them, but for the world of for NFL, for the world, just a big loss. For
football in yeah. general, you just know.
A big loss.
I think yeah. about how, you know, I was born in 1983. The first John Madden football game came out in 1988. Now, at that point, I didn't have a system yeah. to play it on, so I didn't yeah. play it that early. But ever since I can remember, I love football. Mm-hmm. And so the first video game I ever possessed
mm-hmm.
Was on Nintendo, and it was John Madden Football.
Yeah.
And I remember renting it from Blockbuster. My mother rented it from Blockbuster.
Mm-hmm.
And I was playing it on a Nintendo. And like, it just being able to control the players after watching, like, I think I was like 4 years old when the Super Bowl, when the Washington football team now
yeah.
Was in the Super Bowl playing against the Denver Broncos. And I just remember looking at Doug Williams and seeing him hoist the trophy and like yeah. just being so in love and so enamored with the sport of football. And so and when I got to actually like play it on a video game and you hear John Madden's voice all over
yeah.
it, it's like you could hear that, play it on that video game and then go to a TV channel where a game was playing and hear his voice and you hear his analysis. And so
yes. over
the years, his impact on football is just indelible.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the things that I love was that he got to smell his flowers before he passed.
Absolutely.
Because last Saturday, I believe, which was Christmas Day, they did a kind of a documentary
mm-hmm.
about John Madden's life and his impact on football. And, mm-hmm. you know, he passed on Tuesday, but he yeah. got to see that.
Exactly. Or
at least I hope that he got to see
it. I'm sure he did.
It came out before,
right.
you know, his passing. So
his flowers were given regardless.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, no, that's good. It's funny you even mentioned him because I don't play video games. I didn't, like, mm-hmm. these kids don't even think about it. Like, they just get them. I need the new Madden game. Mm-hmm. They don't even, like, the story behind it is this man. Right. It ain't just a name. It's a man. Like, yeah, so I think that's dope. All right, so our second feel-good final yes. thought this week is about Miss Becky Hammon.
Yes.
Which, this is so dope. So clearly, yeah. we go from eyeball sweat to smiles.
Yeah.
All the teeth showing with this one. So Miss Becky Hammon is in the process of securing a deal
yeah.
to become the highest paid WNBA head coach.
Yes.
Dope. Let's go. Yeah.
Oh, and for the record, while the paper hasn't been signed, the ink hasn't dried or anything like that, she will become the highest WNBA head coach. They're just combing over the details.
Mm-hmm.
Of the agreement, but she will be the highest
Nope.
WNBA head coach, highest paid WNBA head coach.
Nope. Love it. Yeah. She deserves it.
Nah, she definitely deserves it. I think it's dope that she's getting this opportunity, and she'll be a rock star in that league.
Yeah.
Hopefully that will bring more eyes on the league, which will generate more revenue.
Yes.
Which is why she's worth, I'm sure she's worth more than what they're giving her.
But
she's
right, worth, right.
She's certainly worth every penny.
Yeah, no, I love this. For her to come from the NBA and go, like, you know what I mean? Like right. that in itself is huge. It's almost like when we talked about the kids making the decisions, these five-star recruits making the decision to go to HBCUs.
Right.
It's that, it like that one kid, I can't remember his name, and his whole purpose in doing so was to spotlight and bring more attention to the HBCU as an option for other athletes. He was willing to be that pioneer, and I feel like her doing this is doing the same thing.
I got to be honest, it's a bit bittersweet for me.
Yeah, to see her leave the NBA.
To see her leave the NBA, because I feel like, you know, she was on the cusp of getting an NBA job. And I think that, you know, I think that would have, at least for the culture, that would have been like a significant step in, you know, women equity and, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because they're a bunch of men's coaches in the WNBA.
Absolutely.
But there's no male. There's no woman head coach in the NBA. No. And so I think personally, I just would have liked to see that.
Yeah. And she probably has some insight. I feel like she has some insight to know that that was going to be a harder road.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Probably so.
Being a head coach.
She probably wouldn't have, you know, because as we know, she didn't get the Portland job. And so she probably saw that and saw that, okay, maybe, you know, there's a ceiling to this.
Yeah. So, but kudos to you, Becky. Good luck.
Yeah.
And go handle your business. I'm not worried at all about. I feel like she's probably gonna dominate.
Oh, sure.
And that's why, and we're gonna see more of that happening. More, maybe that's what they start to do, is create some pipeline that starts in the NBA and brings them into WNBA, like something.
Yeah, something
I'm looking on what I'm excited about what this brings to the game.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Show picks. We're at the end, so here we are with our show picks. What you watching?
I am watching a mini docuseries on Netflix called The Business of Drugs.
Mm.
And this is a...
Is this pharmaceutical?
CIA, huh?
Is this pharmaceutical drugs?
This is illegal drugs. Okay. So like each episode has an illegal drug. So episode one started off with cocaine. And then it kind of moved into crystal meth and, you know, but it just talks about it talks about the economics of it and why we are not winning the war on drugs, even though we're spending a ridiculous amount of money on it.
Mm.
And so it was good, especially like, you know, it's coming from a CIA operative.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one doing the investigative reporting on it.
Okay. So, he knows what he's talking about. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Y'all know, if you don't know, Jared's like this history documentary.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So this stuff is fascinating for him. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. I love it. All right. So me, I stumbled upon this on YouTube. It is apparently produced by Netflix, but it is a YouTube show.
Mm-hmm.
Called Love That For Us.
Okay.
And I only have watched one episode, but when I tell you, and it's only like 15, 20 minutes, but it was so touching.
Yeah.
It was Amber Riley, who was an actor and singer, and her guy, and I don't know his name, but basically what this show is just sitting down with them, and they go through... they use a topic. The way that they format, I believe, is they use a topic and they use that topic to discuss their own relationship. And so in this particular episode, she and her man were using Love Jones.
Okay.
to talk about how they felt about parts of the movie, but then also to talk about their own relationship. So it was, it's just really good.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Right. It was really cool. And I see there are many there are several episodes on YouTube. So I'm diving all in later today, probably. Yeah. Well, maybe not today because football, but before the weekend is over, I will dive in and see exactly what's happening. But I just thought it was so cool. And just their story. I love watching people in love.
Yeah.
And so just watching the two of them talk about, you know, he's somebody who's not famous. You know what I mean? And so she saw him and slid in his DM.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I said, maybe that's what I'm doing wrong. You know, that's how Sherelle got with Ocho, too. I'm like, what?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, am I missing something? I'm not sliding in people's DMs. That's not
happening. It goes so, down in the DMs.
I ain't sliding nobody. I'm sorry. So, yeah. But, yeah, I thought it was really beautiful. So, that's really cool. Check that out. No, it's really cool. And it's, like I said, it was several couples on that they had on there. So it's really cool. So yeah. All right.
Yeah.
We're at the end of another one. This was 142.
142.
We're at the end of 142. So if you all want to read, well, we encourage you, how about that, to interact with us. Yes. And so this is my first time doing this, so bear with me. The ways that you can interact with us, email feel2therealpodcast@gmail.com. You can reach us on Twitter at feel2therealp1 at IG, on our IG at feel2therealpodcast, feel2therealpodcast. Facebook is what you see behind us, Feel to the Real Podcast. Mm-hmm. And our YouTube page is Feel to the Real Podcast.
Yes.
Make sure you get on, subscribe, like, especially our YouTube page.
Mm-hmm.
And always know that we put out these episodes. You get them audio on all platforms on Friday. And then Jared so graciously chops these up for you. So that you don't have to sit for an hour and a half listening to us, but you can get each segment as we talk about it throughout the week from Monday to Thursday at 8 p.m. They are dropped on YouTube. So don't hesitate to reach out to us if you want to be on the show, if you have feedback, please respond to our Who's Really Right, who you think, and we will see you all next week.
Oh, shout out to Brian Abson Sr., who he put on for our Who's Really Right last week. He put on on IG, and he was like, why can't both of them be right?
I saw that. Yes. Why can't it be both? Right. And so it is, right? Yeah.
If you think it is, it is.
It is, right? And so it is. So yeah, thank you for actually interacting with us. So for anybody, please, like I said, I gave them out. We look forward to talking to you and interacting with you. And happy new year.
Yes.
As we go into 2022, we pray that your new year will be the best year of your life.
Yes.
All right. Peace.
Be out.
Yes, we out. Peace.
Now put the cameras on me. 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 Put the cameras on me.